Alright, you remember what I said about the mic?
Yeah.
Wait, what did you say about the mic?
You want to be close.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good start.
Welcome to the Michael Jackson Case for Innocence podcast. My name is Cheryl, and this is my daughter.
Hi, I'm June.
June is an avid Michael Jackson fan, and she's the reason I'm here talking to you. Our podcast stems from my concern and alarm over sex abuse allegations against Michael Jackson, and it details the evidence I went through to determine his guilt or innocence. Today we'll cover the background on why we made this podcast, and we'll preview the evidence you can expect to hear in the following episodes. First, I want to give you an idea of the level of fandom in my daughter's life. So here's June in her own words about Michael Jackson. So June, what makes you a hardcore Michael Jackson fan?
Well, I love everything about him. The stories behind his songs, the artists who influenced him, and I know about his background and career and humanitarian work. I also know details some casual fans wouldn't know, like his unreleased tracks.
And when did you first become a fan?
I became a fan when I was 10, in 2018, and I was trying to discover some different music. I found a playlist of 80 songs, and my favorite from the list was from Michael Jackson. I started to listen to more of his music, watch his videos and concerts, and it grew from there.
And what was it about his music that stood out to you?
He really puts himself into his music. There's an energy and sincerity I heard in his songs that made him different. It was more complex than other pop music I was listening to, and that drew my attention.
And final question, June, what is it about Michael Jackson that inspires you?
He's a role model to me because of how he found purpose in his music. By using his money for good causes and making music that really moved people, I'm also inspired by his kindness and how he was always trying to help people.
So that introduction gives you a sense of my daughter's devotion to Michael Jackson. I wasn't a fan myself, and neither was my husband. So we watched from the sidelines as June's love of Michael Jackson grew, and this love became a big part of her identity. So it was a bombshell in our household when in early 2019, the Leaving Neverland special premiered on HBO. The show features two men accusing Michael Jackson of sex abuse when they were kids. I found out about the documentary through my usual media outlets, NPR, The Washington Post, and Time Magazine. I first listened to David Biancooley's review of Leaving Neverland on Fresh Air. Biancooley found these accounts of sex abuse credible. He said the show should be seen, and said these were powerful and unforgettable stories. Hearing this review alarmed me, and I planned the serious conversation I needed to have with my then 11-year-old. My husband stashed the Washington Post review of Leaving Neverland in my office, so June wouldn't see it before I had the chance to look at it. This review in the Post by Hank Stuever was more unsettling. He called it riveting and devastating, and included an action request to turn off the music and listen to these men. After reading this review, I brought it right to my daughter, and we discussed the accusations. Although child molestation was a mature topic for an 11-year-old, I've always been open when it comes to sex education, and June knows anything she's curious about, I'll answer honestly. June came to me with questions about Larry Nassar and Harvey Weinstein after seeing them in the news, and I experienced through these discussions the importance of helping her process how these powerful men were able to abuse their victims. So I had no hesitation in showing my daughter the review in the Post. June herself found the Time Magazine review of Leaving Neverland, which said the show presented damning evidence to support the accusations. June was upset after seeing these articles. She believed in Jackson's innocence based on reading so much about him, and learning how he was used by many people for his fame and money. But I discussed with June the importance of taking accusations seriously, even when the accused is someone you love. We talked about not being so emotionally attached to a person that you can't be open to evidence. We talked about how child sex abuse is a widespread problem and was a blind spot in society until recent decades. We also discussed how the field of psychology is in agreement that false accusations of sex abuse are rare. On the other side, we talked about the value of due process and not jumping to conclusions without a thorough investigation. We discussed how we may never know about Jackson's innocence or guilt. June took all of it very maturely. She understood my message and placed her trust in me to have no other motivation than getting at the truth when I looked into these allegations. I first wanted to watch the documentary for myself. My bias going into the film was that Jackson was probably guilty, based on all the reviews. But after watching Leaving Neverland, I only felt confusion. There was the part of me that felt disturbed and shocked when I heard the graphic details of abuse, but I was also surprised by the lack of evidence to support these claims. And although I expected to hear the stories these men had to tell, I didn't expect the whole documentary would only be their stories. It's not that I believed or didn't believe the accusations. I had no idea at that point if they were true or not. It's just that I was filled with questions I needed answered before I could weigh in. Watching Leaving Neverland made me question all the certainty in those reviews. I wondered if the movie critics knew more about the evidence that was presented in this documentary. Is that why they found the accusations so credible? Because I was confused as to how anyone could be so confident based on this film that revealed no verification process. There was no attempt to seek out an alternative viewpoint, which was a yellow flag to me. If the filmmaker, Dan Reed, expects me to trust him that he verified these claims, I need to understand all the evidence he went through before filming this. I checked to see if Reed had his source material laid out on a website, but I was unable to find anything. And his media interviews didn't give more than a general idea of his research. The presumption of guilt based on this documentary wasn't adding up for me, and I was ready to see what I could find through my own research. Wherever the evidence led me, there would be a lesson for my daughter. It was going to be a lesson in deception on one side or the other. As a parent, I felt motivated not to stand by and watch June hero worship a child predator. But I owed her and Michael Jackson a fair look at the evidence. It didn't take long into my research to discover damaging credibility issues. Both Leaving Neverland accusers filed lawsuits against the Michael Jackson estate, seeking financial compensation for sex abuse. It's in these court documents that I saw repeated deception. Accuser Wade Robson was caught hiding evidence from the defense on multiple occasions. And one of Robson's apparent lies was so blatant that the judge dismissed his witness statement, in effect saying that no rational juror could believe it. The other accuser, James Safechuck, made many misleading statements in his lawsuit and claims events took place that were impossible based on Jackson's known and public schedule. But I didn't want to get biased early on against these accusers, even with these discoveries, so I kept challenging myself to seek out evidence to support their claims. And I didn't want to just look at the allegations made in Leaving Neverland, but also to include the 1993 and 2005 cases against Jackson. After all, the lawsuits of Robson and Safechuck state that Jackson operated a sophisticated pedophile organization. So they're not just claiming that they alone were abused. To evaluate the Jackson allegations, I needed to look at all four accusers and their claims. So that's when I went deep. I went looking for all possible arguments for his guilt and all possible arguments for his innocence. It was a confusing muddle at times. There are websites dedicated to making the case for Jackson's innocence and those committed to showing his guilt. I tried to evaluate it all with the same standards. But the deeper I looked, the more the evidence accumulated pointing to Jackson's innocence. I was astonished. In those first months of research, I cautioned June that all we can say is that the evidence at this time does not incriminate Jackson. I cautioned her against the statement Michael Jackson is innocent. But several more months into my research, I was surprised to find that the evidence was overwhelming. And that I could substantively say I believe Jackson to be completely innocent, based on current evidence. It rattled me knowing about all this publicly available evidence that could clear Michael Jackson's name. Yet no major news outlet was interested in an independent investigation. It also bothered me to think about how the recent unfounded denunciation of Jackson affected his family, his fans, and his legacy. Meanwhile, my daughter had the challenge of being at the peak of her fandom when this hit. She wore the t-shirts, had the posters, and loved to talk about his music with friends. But she felt uncomfortable after this documentary as she wondered, who was it safe to talk with about Michael Jackson? And should she hide her fandom in public? Fortunately, within our own social circles, there wasn't much of a reaction to this TV show. Some hadn't even heard of it. Of those who had, most just figured we'll never know for sure. As one neighbor said to me, isn't it just a he said situation? So for the most part, June still experienced positive support for her fandom. However, she did run into some disturbing situations that I'm sure most Jackson fans can relate to. June had the upsetting experience of being banned from mentioning Michael Jackson on a popular learning platform for kids. So June, can you tell us what happened on this website?
I put Michael Jackson as my favorite singer in my profile page and listed his songs as my favorites, and it was all deleted. They said it was because of the recent controversy about him.
And what was your reaction?
I was pretty upset. I couldn't believe he was banned just for being accused on a TV show. It seemed unfair because kids could mention other celebrities with known questionable behavior, but it was only Michael that got banned.
In another instance, June was asked what she was up to in a big online group chat with her schoolmates. June mentioned how much she was into Michael Jackson, and a couple of kids expressed shock and disgust and commented that he was a child molester. So how did you respond to these comments, June?
I said that I wouldn't be a fan of someone who hurt kids and included a link to some evidence for his innocence. But it bothered me because now it wasn't just adults reacting to the documentary.
Another struggle for June in the months after the documentary release was seeing all the celebrities who made disparaging public remarks about Michael Jackson. An Oprah magazine post said it was time to say goodbye to Michael Jackson. Dax Shepard called Jackson a monster. And Drake pulled a Michael Jackson song from his show. Katie Couric tweeted about the lifelong trauma of the Leaving Neverland accusers. And Judd Apatow said it only took him 5 minutes into the documentary to believe the accusers. This was painful for June, seeing these high-profile figures so quick to condemn Jackson without any detailed knowledge of the accusers' lawsuits that reveal their deceit and the weaknesses of their claims. But what really lit the fire in her to do something was an experience she had at camp that summer in 2019. The best thing about this camp, according to June, are the counselors, who she looks up to with admiration. A favorite counselor asked her one day what kind of music she liked. When she told him Michael Jackson, he responded, "Great music, horrible man." It was like a punch to her gut. So how did you respond to your counselor's comments?
It bothered me because I didn't know how to respond, and I didn't respond because I didn't know what to say to make me sound like I wasn't just crazy. I just couldn't believe someone would say something like that, as if it was just common knowledge.
When she got home from camp, June told me she wanted to do something to educate people she knew about these allegations. She first thought of doing a presentation for family and friends. But we soon realized in order to cover all the evidence, we were looking at a week-long seminar. We finally came up with the idea of a podcast. It would be something June could refer people to if she got any questions or harsh words from anyone. Now, because of the graphic nature of the allegations and the complexity of the legal cases, I did all of the research for this podcast. But June is my motivation, to give her the source to share with others. To wrap up this introductory episode, June and I will give you an overview of the evidence you'll be hearing in this podcast. Here's a rundown of 7 major takeaways that came out of my research into the Michael Jackson allegations.
Number 1, the evidence is clear and convincing.
This is not a we'll never know situation. There's enough evidence to make the case for Michael Jackson's complete innocence of any child molestation.
Number 2, all 4 of Jackson's accusers, or their family members, have common factors that led to their false accusations.
They all had a history of grift or financial troubles at the time of their allegations. They all had aspirations to fame, a sense of entitlement, anger at Jackson, and relevant mental illness.
Number 3. The media plays a dominant role in all 4 sex abuse cases against Jackson.
Because it was so lucrative for the media to tell negative stories, many reporters became invested in Jackson's guilt, which biased them and therefore the public against him. The narrative of the biggest celebrity in the world being a child molester was too tantalizing not to promote.
Number 4. Santa Barbara District Attorney Tom Snedden demonstrated an early guilty bias against Michael Jackson.
D.A. Tom Snedden first decided that Jackson was guilty and then investigated him, biasing the entire process in the sex abuse cases from 1993 and 2005. Snedden used the media to promote his guilty narrative and moved forward a case that should never have gone to trial had he taken the time or care to honestly weigh the credibility of the accusers.
Number 5. There was no evidence found against Jackson in the 2 sex abuse cases that were actually investigated by the police and brought before a jury.
Despite the aggressive and exhaustive efforts of DA Tom Snedden and police detectives, nothing incriminating was ever found on Michael Jackson, including no child pornography, no physical evidence, and no evidence of payoffs. In fact, Jackson was asked by the parents of these accusers for money before taking the allegations public, but Jackson refused to pay them.
Number 6. Michael Jackson's family background is a major factor in his vulnerability to false sex abuse claims.
While Jackson's strong religious beliefs and sheltered life helped him stay grounded in the face of his fame, this background also made him more gullible because he trusted people so easily and was raised to put the comfort and needs of others before his own. You will hear many stories about how these traits of trust and generosity led to bad actors taking advantage of Michael Jackson in business and personal relationships, including his 4 accusers. And lastly,
Number 7. There's more to the Leaving Neverland story.
Viewers of Leaving Neverland believe the story because it was carefully crafted to tell a compelling and cohesive narrative of abuse. But the filmmaker relies on the cognitive bias described by psychologist Daniel Kahneman. What you see is all there is. The audience thinks what's presented in Leaving Neverland is all there is. They don't know what they don't know. But once you investigate the history of these accusations, as deception scientists say you should, a completely different picture emerges. These 7 takeaways give you an idea of the type of evidence you'll hear in the upcoming episodes. But we'll also be making many additional arguments, such as how Jackson's trait of conflict avoidance plays a role in each of the sex abuse claims, how Jackson's scalp burn, vitiligo, and lupus factor into the allegations, and unlike convicted offenders Harvey Weinstein and Jeffrey Epstein, you'll hear how Jackson did not nurture protective business and media relationships. We'll present the evidence to support all of these conclusions throughout the podcast. When I first started researching the allegations against Jackson, I wasn't interested in his humanitarian work, his musical genius, or how nice people said he was. I only wanted evidence directly pertaining to the claims of abuse. So this is why our podcast jumps right into the allegations of Jackson's 4 accusers, Jordan Chandler, Gavin Arvizo, Wade Robson, and James Safechuck. If we stopped the podcast after presenting the 4 cases, it would raise enough doubt to argue that we shouldn't be condemning Michael Jackson based on these particular claims. But to make the case that Jackson is innocent of any child sex abuse, the podcast needs to present a credible, innocent explanation for his close relationships with kids. So in addition to presenting the accusers' cases against Jackson, in Season 2, we'll use the details from his life story to support the case for innocence. Because transparency is necessary for verifying stories, I do my best to name sources as we go along. And there's an extensive reference list for all episodes on our website. In this first episode, June and I wanted not only to introduce ourselves, but to establish that our goal for this podcast is to be fact-based and fair. and that we won't hold back evidence on either side. We especially encourage those who believe Jackson is guilty to tune in and check our references for yourself. The material presented here is evidence that should be considered before judging Jackson's guilt or innocence.
To find out more about the podcast and to check the source material as each episode is released, please visit our website, MichaelJacksonCaseForInnocence.com.
In the next episode, we'll begin with the first sex abuse case against Michael Jackson, the Chandler allegations.
In part one, we'll cover how Michael Jackson meets the Chandler family and the steps that led to Jordan Chandler's confession of abuse.
We hope you'll join us on our podcast journey into the Michael Jackson allegations.
Thank you for listening to the Michael Jackson Case for Innocence podcast. Well, I love every aspect of his life, from his music to his dancing, and...